Welcome to Sri and Kira Live, the voice of passionate action, bringing fresh perspectives and timeless wisdom for today's shifting paradigm. Now, it is your moment to open your mind, relax into your body and spirit as we explore the greater meaning of your now experience. Bringing wisdom, laughter, and clarity, here are Sri and Kira.
Namaste, beloved ones, and welcome to the Voice of Passionate Action. I am Kira Ra.
And I am Sri Ram Ka, and we are delighted to be with you.
You know, Sri, this is such a special show. It's been such a special month, and aren't you blown away that this month is almost over? I am. Well, I'm really blown away.
I try not to look at those things.
Well, you know, I think that's just as well. And you know, as you're saying, I try not to look at those things. Today's show, you know, remember, we're in this powerful, Sri and I have been calling it November, you know, this November, December energy, and very, very, very powerful. And, you know, this week, this month has been building. And today we're going to talk about the Ebola myth, because that's what this is, guys. It's a myth. And we have a lot to talk about. Sri and I are going to share some things that are probably uncomfortable for a lot of people to hear, and some things that a lot of you are probably already sitting there going, I knew that was true. Because we're going to also really tie this into the true healing power that you have inside of you and the destructive power of fear. Because, I mean, let's face it, the Ebola myth is really about fear.
Fear is truly, to quote a movie, the mind killer.
Yes, it is. All right, Dune.
One of the things I want to remind folks is when you begin to accept that there is a rational, reasonable threat, then you've swallowed your fear hook, line, and sinker.
Right.
You know, and that's part of the illusion, is that we tend to be spoon-fed what we call our reasonable or rational fears.
Right.
And then they're trumped up to the level of irrationality, allowing people of a more sensible nature to relax back into a normal level of fear.
But now, you know, Sri, Sri said that. You guys need to know, I was kind of looking at him like, who is this? Because if you didn't catch the fact that he was being extremely ironic, please do.
And so one of the things we want to poke fun at is how the Western media, especially in the United States, you know, it's really gotten to quite an extreme. And when you don't have any comparisons, then they begin to be accepted as the norm.
Yeah, yes.
You know, I want to tell you, the first time I went to New York and we stayed at a nice hotel up on the 7th or 8th floor, and it was so noisy, horns honking and traffic.
We had to go up. I think I made them move us to the 18th. Poor Sri.
Anyway, and I was talking to some New Yorkers. And I said, boy, it's noisy. And they said, what are you talking about? You know, they don't even notice it anymore. Similarly, people who go to the country who have lived in the city find that the quiet
is scary,
is irritating.
It's intimidating. You know, intimidating. Yeah, yeah.
And so it is with the silly televised news media that is so widespread in the United States, especially with the level of distortion, exaggeration, inflammation, and sheer drama that is given sound bites. When you have nothing to compare it to, people begin to accept it.
Well, now this is really, Sri, I love that you're bringing this up, because, you know, as we dive into today's show, talking about the Ebola myth and your true healing power, and we have a wonderful guest we're going to be bringing on, Ted Geldy, in just a few moments. One of the things that I want to share is that it's important to remember, beloved ones, that, and we've done a lot of shows about this, that the groupthink, okay, groupthink means that your thoughts, whether you're aware of it or not, 87% of the general population literally have beliefs and thoughts and ideas that are being conditioned through what's known as groupthink. And groupthink is the total sum of the energy, the media, the words, the stories, the selection of stories that you bombard yourself with, whether you're doing it intentionally or unintentionally. And the only way that you can be independently thinking is to be conscious of the groupthink stereotype and the groupthink model, and allow yourself to recognize that free thinking is not a crime. You know, Sri and I have been recently revisiting, and if you haven't revisited it, go revisit the Oliver Stone series on history. The Untold History of the United States. If you've not visited that lately, it was 10 shows. It was done on Showtime. We grabbed it online. Go revisit it. And here's why. It was a brilliant, broad attempt, and I really honor and respect Oliver Stone's attempt to bring forward the fact that we have had over the past several hundred years several rare opportunities to shift out of the groupthink fear tank. And every time we have not been able to accomplish that. And perhaps that's one of the reasons the Ebola myth is here, is to offer us another reason to shift out of this groupthink fear tank, because that's what's going on. And I love, Sri, that we're talking about this in this November, December moment, because this was also what happened in early November. You know, in early November in the United States, you saw a dramatic, I'm going to use the word polarization to the conservative right of the United States. And you're also seeing this sweeping worldwide right now. And historically, that's when we hit very dangerous moments.
Well, it's one of those ones that I hate to admit, I'm a little cynical. It's just that...
Don't admit that!
I won't admit it. I just stand witness to the political process in the United States and how the pendulum swings back and forth. And this isn't the first time there's been a midterm election where a lot of Republicans were elected. I think it happened during Clinton's...
It did.
You know, and the point of the matter is, regardless of the drama, the polarization, the taking sides, my party is better than your party, regardless of all of that, regardless of who's in the White House, there seems to be a momentum at work.
Yes.
In the political process that doesn't really give a hoot about what political party is in charge. The momentum keeps marching forward.
Well, and this is where I think this Ebola myth, and I just want to say it this way. Of course, Ebola is real. When we talk about the Ebola myth, we are not trying to say, you know, we're not standing up as a right-wing conservative saying that there's no such thing as global warming. We're not saying there is no such thing as Ebola. Ebola is very real, but it's been around for a very long time. What we want to really look at today is, why is this the myth of Ebola, the way that we're making a hysteria, the way that we're bringing it to the public worldview? Why is that coming up right now? And we've got lots and lots of real things to talk about regarding that.
Well, and the one just to kind of set the groundwork here is, it's truly a tragic situation in West Africa.
Yes.
There's 4,000 or 5,000 people have died.
Yeah, no, it's horrid.
Of this virus. And in large part, the deaths are due to the lack of sanitary conditions, the inability to deal with infected material, and even those people that have passed on.
Well,
when they deal with their burial rites,
right, that's been the biggest problem.
Infection for large numbers.
They also say that it was because of the burial procedures and because of the lack of education. That's what made it worse.
And so this tragedy in Africa has a completely different context than exists in westernized countries. And the level of sanitation and understanding of disease and transmission is quite different. And the level of governmental infrastructure and resources are quite different in the U.S. and Europe.
Well,
and other countries.
As you're saying
so why would we be terrorized?
Well, you know, that's why I was just sitting here, as you were saying that, I was kind of smiling, thinking, and as we sit here and calmly talk about that, of course, I'm sure you're sitting here listening going, well, yes, of course. Yet when there is a frenzy of talking points, because talking points, remember, are control points. Talking points are ways to control group think. And so when the talking points all become around this alarmist atmosphere and this ridiculous, sense of lack of understanding, that's when things become fear-based. And I want to remind all of you guys, we are live today. So, you know, certainly give us a call if you want to get into the queue. You can give us a buzz at 888-627-6008. Again, that's 888-627-6008. Get in the queue. And remember, while you're in the queue, you can listen live. And also, we are enjoy your questions, your comments, and of course, your requests for soul readings. But Sri, you know, getting back to this whole thing right now, what I find fascinating, and we have so many things that we want to share that I'm not sure a lot of you out there listening are aware of. one of the things I find fascinating is that who are the winners? You know, what would be the reason that a quote unquote Ebola fear scare or a heightened alert level for Ebola? We don't have a coding system yet, but I wouldn't doubt they put one in. I don't know what terror color we're at, but you know, but so what, who would win by that? Well, you know, the first obvious winner are these big pharma companies that just received billions of dollars of emergency money. We just pulled billions of dollars of this money out of God knows what rabbit's hat to give to big pharma to develop an epidemic. To develop the vaccine. And you look at, okay, well, who was the first one to win by this? Well, that's the first big winner, isn't it?
Absolutely. And the whole notion that we need an Ebola czar in the United States.
That's
isn't
amazing.
That when you take a look at all the other illnesses and problems in the U.S.,
absolutely.
That they would appoint and create another bureaucracy
Correct.
For a an infinitesimal risk.
Right.
Be that as it may, and there are those that certainly would argue with my use of words there, the one thing that is important, I think, is to recognize that we live in two zones. There is the part of us that's engaging this illusionary world of density that has its conventions, its cultures, its delights, and its tragedies. And certainly the political situation, let alone the economic and social situation in various countries, is very engaging. And yet, each of us carries within our own ascended hearts, within our own inner being, a sense of a deeper truth. And that truth needs to be fanned. It needs to be given its space because it's the source of the underlying harmony.
Absolutely.
It's the part of us that's connected to the fabric beneath which all of this dance of diversity is, let's just say, amusing us.
Well, I love that. And, you know, here's some of the things. What if, you know, the Sri and I are going to share with you, what if there was an absolute safe, non-pharmaceutical alternative that is having incredible results curing Ebola? Would the FDA try to stop it? Yes. Would doctors that are promoting it go be under scrutiny and be getting attacked? Yes. And we've got all these facts that we're going to be sharing with you today because there are ways you can deal with this. We also have an amazing guest on the show today, and we're really delighted because this young man, I love this generation of people. I really do. And when this young man's information came across my desk, I just looked at our booking agent and said, yes, I really want to meet this person. I love what he's doing. A beautiful young man named Ted Galdi, who's recently written a book called Elixir.
And Elixir is a novel. It's an exciting story of how a teenager.
I love that.
How a teenager.
A teenage genius.
Genius, okay.
Uh-huh.
Certainly inspired.
Yes.
Managed to cure his girlfriend of a deadly disease.
Known as Ebola.
And we'll let Ted tell more about that story in a minute. And just by way of further introduction, Ted wrote this novel when he was 29 years old after graduating from Duke University. And he has pursued achievements in film and video and digital media, and he's now working in the software industry, having founded a company. And so Ted wrote Elixir in 2013, and certainly there is a wonderful timing, a wonderful synchronicity.
I love it.
As Ebola hits the world stage and his book was released, there was a synergy there that has given him a boost and brought forward his brilliance to the public eye.
Absolutely.
He's been on ABC and Fox and radio stations. And now he's here with you today.
And we're just delighted to have him because this is a book that needs to get out there. You know, it's funny to me that anything that talks about the beauty of our ability to call forth our genius self.
And our natural healing
absolutely.
Capacities.
Absolutely. And what a rich dialogue. And so welcome, Ted. We're delighted to have you on the show.
Hey, guys. It's great to be here.
Super. Well, we are just delighted to, you know, when somebody rises up into the public eye quickly, it certainly begs some curiosities and questions. And yet a part of me just smiles and say, that's the way change happens.
Indeed.
That's the way good things
Indeed.
Happen.
So Ted, I have to ask straight out because I just love what's going on in your life right now and your energy and how you're bringing it forward. What was your inspiration? I mean, you know, out of all the things that you said, I'm going to write, this is going to be my book. What was the inspiration? What brought this book together for you?
Yeah, so it was funny where I conceptualized the, you know, the idea for this book way before the Ebola outbreak was in the
Right.
news. So it came from a place where I wanted to write an exciting, you know, thrilling story. And I had the premise of, you know, a teenage genius getting thrown into these wild situations because of his smarts. But it really kind of came together when I said, you know, let's layer in a love story and make it a coming of age, adventure about this kid kind of morphing through the years and, you know, finding himself, even though he's, you know, super smart and he's involved in these crazy situations. It really is a universal teenage growing up issue that's at the center of this book that I think a lot of people could relate to, even though the kid in the book is, you know, a one in a billion type person.
Right.
Finding himself and dealing with his natural ability, the good and the bad of it, and, you know, being happy with himself at the end and embracing what he naturally was given. Is really the theme of the book. And it came from more that place than a, hey, I'm going to write a medical book that really is about a disease or whatnot. It was really more that story element with the protagonist that inspired me.
So you were writing a story about human emotions and the development of maturity and love.
Absolutely. So that was the motivation. But then, you know, when Ebola wound up making it into the news, after the book was released, which was an insane coincidence, it definitely took on a bit of a different, spin, where I was hoping that the book could educate people about the disease and bring public awareness towards, finding a cure in the right ways. And the book does shine a light really on how horrible the disease is, and how, you know, easily you could catch it if you are exposed to it. And hopefully that makes people think, you know, we really need to stop this in whatever fashion that may be. So it does accomplish that as well, even though that wasn't necessarily the initial intention of me writing it.
Well, you know, I'm giggling because Sri and I specialize in serendipitous events and unintentional positive consequences.
and yeah, I guess, right?
Right. That's, and so, yeah, like it or not, you were channeling. Yeah. I'm sure you were channeling when you brought this book through, because what inspired you to say, okay, I'm going to go toward Ebola? I mean, how did that come up for you? It was like, well, of all the diseases you could have picked, why Ebola? Do you remember?
I was thinking about it, and there were obviously a lot of diseases that could have fit into this fictional story. Ebola just happened to be, after I was doing some research, a disease that, one, is extremely deadly, and it has the sort of effect that could set the stakes very high in a fictional story, and I did want to accomplish that in the story. And then, two, it works very quickly. So unlike other diseases, if you get Ebola and you don't have the proper care, and, you know, you have a little bit of bad luck with it, it could really work fast. So from a fictional standpoint, that was good in terms of a plot, where the stakes were set really high and the protagonist had a very short time window to cure the disease. And it kind of just boosted the suspense of it. And that's why Ebola really fit in. It was nothing more complicated than that.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect.
Every good thriller has a time, has a deadline and a lot of sense of urgency.
Yeah,
but it doesn't always have a teenage genius. And so I don't want to give away too much of the book, but I would assume that we could share that the teenage genius who does this curing must have come under a lot of interesting or gone through a lot of interesting scenarios, because he was doing something that wasn't quite the mainstream.
Yeah, absolutely. So what he technically does in the book, when his girlfriend winds up catching Ebola on a safari in Africa, he, you know, like we said, there's a deadline. He needed to act quickly. So there was a big pharma company in the book, Colzyme Systems. It's a fictional company that I made up, and they had a disease cure kind of in progress. And what he winds up doing, and this is obviously extremely unconventional, he hacks into their database, finds out exactly what they've made so far, and then finishes the formula that they have yet to be able to finish, because he's just that much smarter than them. And that's kind of how he goes about it, hacking into big pharma and finishing something that they hit a wall on. And
now let me ask you this. He didn't have billions of dollars, though, right?
he did not have any money at all. So he's doing this in a hotel room in Switzerland, and he's just got a laptop and headphones, and that's it. But the pharmaceutical company has billions upon billions of dollars, so it kind of sets up an interesting money dynamic in the book, where his girlfriend's parents also were very rich, and there's definitely an undertone of the financial situation around
And this is the point that I really want to bring up right now, because I really enjoy your book very, very much. And I hope that everybody buys this book. It's called Elixir. You guys need to get it. There's even a website. It's called elixirthebook.com. What I'm really enjoying is that it does a beautiful job through a fictional story of underlying that when we allow ourselves to trust our inner genius, because everyone has their own sense of inner genius that exhibits in different ways, that it's not about government funding or controlling thought. It's about bringing all of our own internal resources to bear to solve an issue. And I really enjoy that this is one creative way that an issue was solved that didn't require Obama going to Congress and asking for billions of dollars. We didn't have to put an Ebola czar into place to solve this situation. And that's what we're seeing on our planet right now, is a near state of hysteria that is inviting people to forget that within each of us is our inner genius. And so I love how you played up the genius of this one person being applied in this way.
Yeah, and you just nailed it. That's the theme of the book right there. And even though he is a literal genius in the book, it's very universal, where I think everybody has something in them, that they struggle with fully embracing. And even if it's not, a mathematical, genius ability like Sean, the protagonist, has in the book, it's something that you could kind of embrace and tap into. And that was the universal common ground of the book, was that no matter what it is, everybody has something in them like that if they look inward, they could, embrace it and roll with it, and, life will be better because of it. And that's what I wanted to really herald with this story.
Well, you've done a great job with that. And that's such a beautiful universal theme, because in all of our lives, it often takes, we as humans tend to learn through our own challenges in our lives. And so whether the challenge is a loved one has Ebola, or whether it's we're looking at a career change or a relationship change or a family situation or something in our lives, it seems that we find our inspiration, we find our inner genius through the situations that are presented to us. And in its own little way, and maybe it's a big way, this could be why this threat, or this perceived threat of worldwide Ebola challenges, is actually a gift to humanity. I think it's inviting us to look at our inner wisdom.
Whenever we're confronted, we have to call forth resources.
Right.
And whether that's an emotional confrontation, intellectual challenge, a life or death, whatever, it's when we rub up close and personal with a confrontation, it really calls us to presence.
It forces us to ask the inner question, do I trust myself, or am I willing to give away even more of my power? Am I willing to let whoever come in and tell me what to think, how to act, what to do? Or am I willing to trust the gifts that are coming forward, but your own inner genius? And, Sri, we have so much to share on the show today, and I know that we have people calling in.
Well, I think what we need to do is we're right up on a station break.
And always comes so fast.
Yes, and when we come back, we're going to take callers. We're going to talk more with our guest, Ted Galdi.
And we're going to share some absolute proof of alternative methods that are actually working against Ebola in Africa.
And so for the moment, we ask you to take a deep breath, put a smile on your face, and stay with us. We'll be right back after these messages.
Welcome to the Self-Ascension Classroom, affordable and beautiful home study for your mystical journey. Imagine the gift of studying everything that you've ever wanted at home and on your time. Yes, it is possible, and there is so much to choose from as you dive into your home study experience. Remember that with every moment you spend studying this gift, you ignite your divinity. Imagine the mysteries of the Toheel and the crystalline clarity and radiant abundance of Vesa, a mastery balancing technique and certification process, and then cosmic life regression. Travel the universe and remember, allow yourself the gift of navigating the inner matrix. This beautiful Ascended Mastery program of the Violet Flame will take you to places you may not have dared to dream to go, and then you will rediscover the true gift of your divine nature. Yes, the time is now to study the ancient mysteries, and it's so easy to begin. Discover the Self-Ascension Classroom only at SriandKira.com. That's SriandKira.com. Namaste. Namaste, beloved one. This is Kira Ra, and I am inviting you to take a journey of the soul in the land of the heart. Imagine your life free from chaos and filled with creative clarity. Imagine waking up each day in your private lakefront casita, greeted by brilliant sun, flowers, and birds. It is here that you will effortlessly resurrect your divine blueprint in pristine energy. Yes, I am inviting you to join us for a personal resurrection vacation retreat at beautiful Lake Atitlan, Guatemala. Here, you can rejuvenate your life as you indulge in Tosa Spa cuisine, private healing sessions, yoga, tai chi, meditation, and loving support. Imagine enjoying pure air, zero noise pollution, and endless stars in this ascended nirvana. The time is now to claim your true joy. Learn more by visiting SriandKira.com and just click on the Resurrection Vacation Treat page. Tosa La Laguna, healing lives, healing hearts. We welcome you home.
The path of self-ascension is a conscious decision that brings your life experience into alignment with soul consciousness, the rare gift of an active approach to living in the heart and manifesting the present moment. Sri Ram Ka and Kira Ra invite you to visit Self-Ascension Magazine, a free online self-ascension hub that lifts your spirits and frees your heart to soar. On the Self-Ascension Magazine website, you can read Sri and Kira's perspectives on what's happening today. Discover a daily meditation and weekly practice. Watch special video and audio clips. Follow Kira Ra's messages from the Archangelic Realm and learn about upcoming events or courses. Relax and enjoy a visit to Self-Ascension Magazine online at www.SriandKira.com. Explore, participate, and unfold this rare treat for yourself. Remember, that's SriandKira.com.
Welcome back. We're delighted to be with you now.
We really are.
And today we're having fun. We're dancing around the whole Ebola crisis.
I'm calling it a myth.
mixing myth and facts and fiction and love and the opportunity.
And our own genius healing power within.
The opportunity to use it to grow.
Yeah.
To use everything is here for your growth. And we're delighted to have with us Ted Galdi, who's written a dynamic book called Elixir. We're going to let Ted talk a little more about the book here in just a moment.
We are, but just so you know, of course, it's at Amazon.com, or you can just go to the website, elixirthebook.com. And you know, Sri, this has been such a powerful conversation today. We're going into so many beautiful places with this, and we have so much, you know, we have some really stunning facts to share too for you guys, things that are absolutely working. I know we have people on the lines.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a caller, and then I want to share with you some alternative healing news that you might find helpful and useful.
Totally.
And so standing by on line two, we have Mari from California.
Namaste, Mari. Welcome.
Namaste. Hello.
Hi,
how are
Angela,
you, beloved?
Welcome.
Hi. Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you for taking the call. This morning when I saw the Ebola, I saw that message on the newsletter and I went out for a hike this morning. I thought, oh my gosh, I need to plug in and see if I can get through. And while I was hiking, I heard the message all of a sudden loud and clear, you're in danger. You're in danger. And I was thinking, what? And I stopped and put my hand on my heart for a minute and tuned in. I'm in danger. And I, right now on this mountain, no. And so I worked through that and said some prayers. And I would like to just comment here, but also a reading, a little bit of a mini reading, because I have worked many years to really trust myself, as you said, and I look forward to reading this book, but also been working with holistic healers who can clear viruses and so also working on consciousness to tune into my own discernment and be really careful and stay out of the group think. And so this week I got my car robbed and a substantial things were taken from my car. And so I find myself looking around, looking behind my back. And I feel like some fear has seeped in. And so I've been just noticing this whole week, all of the energy around it. And, you know, so I wanted to just connect with you today and see if you had some insight for me and just to connect. I so love your work and I'm so grateful for all this, everything you do.
Well, thank you, sweetheart. First of all, I'm really loving that you chose to call today, Mari. It was perfect because really today's show is about the power of fear and how it can disrupt societies, people, careers, the works. And here's, it's funny, as you were sharing, I just sat here in consciousness and asked your higher self to reveal to me anything that needed to be safe for you to hear and see. And here's the message that's coming in for you. And it's very, very strong and clear. They're saying that the answers to your prayers are at hand and there are energies around you, not necessarily people, although I see a couple people that are kind of receiving these energies that are concerned, and that's being polite, that your evolution will basically be their death. And what I mean by that is that you're at a moment of great growth and you're at a moment of being able to spread your wings in a way you have never spread them before. I mean, all I see in front of you is just this incredible abundance, growth, new way of being, new way of navigating. And it's not that you're saying goodbye to what was. It's like you've taken it in and brought it all. It's like you've loved it like a mother and it's now come into its moment of graduation. But there's this energy and it's very... I don't want to use the word dark, but it's just very murky. And this is, it's an energy that's trying to stop you. And that energy is hanging around you. And the way for you to let go of that energy is truly to face these fears head on. You're going to have to dive into it. It's like that moment of stretching your wings, diving into the void and knowing without doubt that you will not fail, you will not fall, and that your wings are strong enough to fly. And so it's a beautiful moment. It's like a birthing moment, Mari. That's the only thing I can share with you. Mm-hmm. You're birthing. And they all keep talking about March. And, you know, March is the escalator to ascension starting in 2015. That by March, you're through the other side and flying. And so anything right now that's causing you fear, thank it. Thank it for reminding you that you've already ascended into the next level. And look at that which you've lost or perceived as lost. Look at that which may have been stolen and how it served. And now maybe how your next steps can integrate that energy without necessarily having to have that energy in front of you. Yeah, breathe.
Okay, thank you. I knew I had to call you, and I'm so grateful that I got through this morning because I know I just keep going forward. And
yep.
I've had so many times in my life where I've been so uncomfortable, and people have laughed at me and, you know, said, oh, my God, this one's such a quack. She's just out there in the ethers. And I'm fully here. I'm here.
Yes, you are.
And I am expanding. I'm expanding,
yes.
You know, and
yes,
so I, you know, that's, yeah, I just, you
yeah.
know, the, I feel it around me, that fear. And so I need to bust through that. So I really appreciate your
right on
today. Thank you.
And we love you.
We love you. You're right on track. And just smile at the fear and it will dissolve. Trust your heart.
Yeah. And stay with the rest of the show because we're going to share some stuff that will blow your mind. Even though it's about some of our topic today, you'll see the serendipity. So I'm really glad you got through and I'm glad you broke through any fear of calling. So congratulations and we love
you.
Thank you, sweetheart.
I love you too. Thank you.
You're welcome, honey.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, whether a person is in a period of what might be called bad luck,
yeah,
or whether there's outright confrontive or negative energies in your life, or just simply an undercurrent of doubt, there is a source for all of these disturbances, and that source tends to be what I would call self-doubt. It's mm-hmm. it's a disconnect from our own divinity.
Absolutely.
You know, there are so many outer world solutions to everything in life, and all of those solutions always fall just a little short if the inner world is not lined up.
Well, and you know, I want to bring Ted back in, because one of the things, as I was listening to Mari, our caller, and as you're sharing, Sri, and as I'm looking at the greater context of today's show, which is our divine healing power within and our ability, you know, Ted, do you mind if I ask how old you are?
I just turned 30.
Okay. Month. All right. Well, congratulations. And hey, and I love that you just turned 30. And this is why I want to ask you this. As you went to Duke, you had a nice university experience. You're into software. You're a designer. You have a creative mind. You've written this incredible book. So you have this wonderfully creative, involved personality being. What have you noticed? If you were to share something with your peers, or when you get together with your peers, what is the conversation when it comes to things like fear? What is the conversation when it comes to things like controlling the way you think, or the way things are moving in that environment? What is that conversation like in your world right now?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, speaking to that, the one thing that you always know is true, and that there's no, you know, spin on it, it is what's going on in yourself. So if you fully believe in something and you're confident about it, no matter what field it is, creatively or in a business world or whatever, you're going to feel strong about it and you're going to move ahead. But if you start listening, you know, to a lot of outside stuff, you know, you could get a mixture of good information and bad information, and to completely hang your hat on, you know, an outside opinion is bad, especially creatively. The best creative works in all fields, I believe, come from a true personal connection with whoever's making the thing, whether it's a song, a book, a painting, you know, directly to the work itself. So it's not so much, you know, hey, I'm going to listen to the times and be in the moment and try to do something that's trendy. And I think this is going to happen because this pundit said this or this person said that. It's more a timeless thing that is just between you and whatever you're doing. And that's why the best, you know, creative works, whether they're 500 years old or came out 2 weeks ago, tend to have a timeless quality. Because it's not about what's currently happening in society so much. It's about, you know, a human connection, you know, with the actual thing that's being made. So that's the best advice I could give to somebody that wants to take on a creative venture.
Beautiful, beautiful. And you know, one of the things I'm hearing you say that I just want to underscore is, even if we seek advice, even if we read a book, we look for a strategy, we try to find a solution to whatever, you know, our motive, whatever our challenge is, ultimately it still comes down to you. You're
Absolutely.
The one that's giving faith and energy to that outer solution. So it you're still have the inner world at task.
And you have to believe in yourself enough to not be talked out of your truth. Ted, I love how you said it earlier. You know, the one thing that you know doesn't have any spin on it is your internal truth. And that is the absolute most beautiful thing to remember. You know, we always say the ultimate lie detector is your heart, because within your own heart, there is this understanding of what you're receiving, what you're seeing, what you're reading. And the times that we live in right now, the groupthink environment, there's even the political think. You know, one of the things that Sri and I were discussing the other day is that whatever happened to the gift of true debate? You know, the United States, for example, the Congress was designed to be a group of people that got together and debated, and how every point, it didn't matter what quote unquote party you were a part of, you debated. All sides of an argument were welcomed and spontaneously offered, versus now you've got to show up with a speechwriter who writes your speech based upon talking points.
Yeah. And I think so much of our world of control is about talking points. It's about planned agendas and spinning them so that people accept them and digest them versus exploring for deeper levels of truth,
right.
Exploring an issue to flush out
exactly
every possible angle, every possible truth to find the best possible solution.
And this is why, Ted, I love having you on the show, and I love that you've just turned 30, and I love that you're part of a generation that's saying, wait a minute, stop spinning my thoughts.
Now, I got a question for you, and it's software related.
Uh-oh, here it comes.
Tell me about the morality of hacking. And I mean this in a very short version. I don't want to get into a big one here. However,
since our minds are being hacked.
No, yeah. Your protagonist was highly motivated to find a solution.
Right.
And hacked into a database to find research information that he then continued forward with. And so really, I kind of have a hidden question when I say, tell me your sense of about the morality of hacking. Is not that kind of hacking simply acquiring knowledge versus stealing something from someone?
Yeah, that definitely is a big turning point in the book, and he doesn't even hesitate when he makes that decision in the book because the stakes were very high. It was either his girlfriend dies, or he hacks into this database and pulls up this information. So, I mean, in general, I wasn't trying to necessarily make a pro hacking statement with that piece of the book. But absolutely, in the book, the protagonist easily makes that decision and, doesn't blink and hacks right into the Big Pharma's database, gets the information he needs because there was a greater good there. One, he saved his girlfriend, and then two, he's creating this big, this serum that really could cure not just Ebola, but a lot of different diseases.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that because it raises an issue in modern society that there is so much secrecy and competitiveness around research.
Yes.
And it just seems to me when people are studying the universe, they're studying the fabric of the universe, whether that fabric is in an organic investigation into a bacteria or a virus or the human body or the human genome, and or it's seed research. And now privatizing the ability to patent nature. And that's a whole nother show. However, there is a difference between research and invasion of privacy.
And how about paid research that's designed to actually come to a conclusion based upon a financial gain of a specific interest?
Yeah, just because you're the first one to discover America doesn't mean you own it. I want to share a little thing that I found back to the Ebola conversation.
And this is for all of you out there listening, and Ted, you might, by the time we're done sharing this, you might go, yeah, I found that in my research. I want to share with you guys that Sri first started looking at this research. It was actually sent to him, and he brought it to me, and we were both like, well, of course, and we absolutely had no problems with it. When Sri, by the time, it's only been, what 3 weeks, Sri, that you've been with this? Within the past 3 weeks, we have literally watched this start disappearing from the web. We have watched it start coming under attack. And that shows you how quickly the window closes on truth and bona fide alternative solutions. And I think this is very powerful, and I'm grateful we can get it out on the air.
Well, and there's no great secret here. It's just an affirmation of a germ-fighting solution that has been available for...
A long time. Yeah.
Now, and so I want to just give you some facts. It's been known for truly decades that colloidal silver is nature's antibiotic. It not only works against organisms, it works against viruses and biological microbes and that kind of thing.
And I want to say that, Sri and I travel the world and we take groups with us everywhere. We have never taken any vaccine, but we also do make our own silver, plus we get other silver that's even more refined than ours. And I have to just say that Sri and I are big fans of this because we know from our own experience how well it works.
And so there's been a tension between the holistic practitioners who like to use colloidal silver and nano silver, and those are two very similar products, mm-hmm. and then the established medical environment.
Right.
And the FDA refuses to approve colloidal silver as a treatment.
It's cheap, and you can make it yourself. That's why.
But here's the piece that I found fascinating. In around August of this year, a batch of colloidal silver was sent to West Africa, and it actually started out for Nigeria, but it ended up in Sierra Leone. And this batch of colloidal silver was funded by Sheikh Massali out of Atlanta, Georgia. And this man was doing a truly philanthropic. Oh boy, there goes my
philanthropic. Name.
Philanthropic. to offer a assistance, because all of these people are dying and they're only using quote unquote FDA approved treatments.
And that they can get a hold of. They don't have enough everything.
And then if they don't have it, they don't have it. Well, right. Here's what happened is this, these cases of colloidal silver made it to Sierra Leone, and the Honorable Alhaji Alpha Kanu, who is the Minister of Presidential and Public Affairs, said the following on October 11th.
That's this year, guys. This just happened.
Just 1 month ago. He said, there is no illness that does not have a cure. And if you say that this illness does not get better, then that's a lie. Because since using the nano silver, 500 people have gotten better. We already have the beds. We have the medicines. This product works. And then a lot of current controversy came up. 9 days later, Minister Kanu made a declaration saying that nano silver is now part of the strategy of his country in helping people with Ebola move past the illness. Now, one of the things that I want to underscore here is that the nano silver that was provided has well-documented effects, yet the FDA has never recognized double-blind studies nor authorized double-blind studies for colloidal silver products. They have only allowed it to be used for veterinary purposes. And other than that, there's a licensed medical doctor in the United States who's selling colloidal silver at her website, claiming that this is, you know, nature's solution to so many infections. Just like, you know, the marvel when penicillin first came
right,
out.
Right, right.
And she's been receiving warning letters from the FDA.
Of course she has.
And so the reason I bring this up is, ultimately, each and every one of you is responsible for the choices you make.
Well, and this is another part of this Grubel thing, the group think. It's Sierra Leone where they're having these marvelous results. And if you watch the news and if you start looking at things, Sierra Leone is actually the country they're shutting down the most. It's where they're saying the problem is the absolute worst. It's where they're saying it's out of control. It's where they're saying it's where you're getting no news. The minute this started coming out, this all came out on an official capacity in middle October. If you track with the mainstream media angels, that's when they started shutting down any information coming out of Sierra Leone.
When the news that this inexpensive health treatment,
non-big pharma, didn't need billions of dollars,
no toxicity, zero side effects.
Right.
When they were reporting that it was actually working, that news got truncated. In fact, Margaret Chan, MD, who is the director of the World Health Organization, says that Ebola is out of control and poses a threat to international peace. And yet, she expressed strong opposition to even trying nanosilver.
Correct. And this was after. Okay, so this is what you guys have to get. And this is what we've been talking about with our guest today. This is part of what he talks about in his book, what we're talking about. You beloved angels, and our caller, I think it was great that Mari called in today. It's important to trust the inner voice within. We are all our own best healer when we can allow ourselves to trust what we know is true and to separate, try to wade through the spin, the fact fiction machine. Now, we are in no way advocating anything that would be contrary to your own advice or medical advice. What we are saying is that when we have a culture that is denying natural alternatives and burying things that work, it does beg the question, especially with Ebola becoming such a huge topic, it begs the question of who is the real winner by this becoming such a large topic?
And who are you delegating your health to?
Exactly. Who are you delegating your life to?
Because we also know that the human body actually consists of a gazillion living organisms.
Is that an official term?
These microbes that live in your intestinal lining and inside your body are essential to your health.
Absolutely.
And that the antibiotics that have been proliferated around our civilized worlds have destroyed the human ability to defend against natural conditions. Now, listen, Ted, I know that you did a lot of research in putting together your novel, and I'm curious if colloidal silver, nanosilver, showed up on your screen at that time.
To be honest, it did not. I didn't research any specific, serums or anything that were in the works, so I'm sure if I did kind of jump into that, I probably would have seen it come up. When I did my research, it was more about the nature of Ebola itself, not so much current cure in the works. If I did dig in more, I'm sure I would have seen it come up somewhere.
Well, and the one thing I will say, just to put on the other hat for a moment, if I were in Africa and people were dying all around me, I too might be frightened.
Absolutely.
As you look at, you don't know who's touched the table, the chair, the doorknob in front of you. There's death and disease all around you. And all one can do is be extremely mindful of your own hygiene and mindful of your surroundings. And yet we are living in a world that actually has other kinds of threats that are equally present.
Well, and Sri, I have to jump in and say this because I think it ties in with the way Ted wrote his book also, is that, okay, Ted's hero of the book, this young man, reacted and found something because it wasn't that he had hundreds of people around him dying. It was somebody that he dearly loved was dying, and he had a tight time frame. So all options were open, essentially, right? All options were open. As you mentioned, Ted, he didn't even hesitate. It was like, okay, I'm going to hack in. I'm going to find out. I'm going to get a cure. Would it not behoove all these people? I mean, to me, it's like shame on Dr. Wan, shame on her for what she said. Would it not behoove the powers that be, so to speak, to say, if I know that we've had trials and I know that we've had people that whose lives have been saved, what on goodness earth would be the risk in trying things that you know are proven and safe to save as many lives as possible? There has to be a hidden agenda. And while I don't want to go into the conspiracies, I don't want to go into any of that, I do want everyone's eyes open to the fact that you need to ask yourself, when anything like this becomes in front of the public opinion, who's the winner here? The winner isn't the people that are dying. The winner isn't the people that are being truly eradicated through this denial. The winner are those who are going to get these billions of dollars of subsidies that are going to develop God knows what type of vaccine. Where are they going to take that hysteria to where that if you want to travel internationally, you have to have an Ebola vaccine? I mean, where are they going to take that? Who's the winner?
Well, they're legislating customers for a private enterprise.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And that's an amazing thing. That's like using eminent domain to benefit private industry. A whole nother conversation.
Well, that's a whole other show or two. So, Ted, I want to ask you this. As we culminate your book at the end, and as our show is also getting close to culminating here, what's the greatest lesson you feel people can take from your book? What's the message?
Yeah, so the message from the book is that you may be born with something that at first you don't necessarily think is an advantage. It might actually be, something that you think is a curse. But if you kind of embrace it and look at it in the right way, it has the potential to be something that's, terrific and wonderful. And that's really the theme of the book. And the protagonist kind of exhibits that, where in the beginning he really exhibits it. In the beginning, he hates the fact that he's so smart and so different from everybody else, but then it's that actual genius that he winds up embracing to save his girlfriend and come up with this serum that, really Beautiful. Just eradicates a lot of terrible diseases. So that's the theme is, you know,
beautiful.
Look inward and you could find something that's great. Yeah.
You know, and I think each and every one of us has our own genius. Even the key is to measure it in terms of yourself, not in terms of some so-called objective outer standard.
And to remember that no matter how freaky or ununique you think you are, or if other people call you crazy, smile, say thank you, and move forward with your divine gifts.
Absolutely. And if you'd like to learn more about Elixir, it's simply elixirthebook.com, E-L-I-X-I-R, elixirthebook.com.
And you can also find the book Elixir at Amazon.com.
And we're talking with Ted Galdi today, and we thank you, Ted, for being with us. And as we come to a close, I want to say to all of our listeners today, thank you.
Yes.
For being with us. And take a deep breath, because we're coming to a close for this show, and we're going to be back next week.
With a huge culminating November show. Very exciting.
And for this moment, may you know that all is truly well. See you next week.
Thank you for joining us at Sri and Kira Live. To have your questions answered, send us an email to guest@sriandkiraradio.com and check out more information at sriandkira.com. See you next week. Namaste.